We're going to start with step 10. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory. And we went wrong, promptly admitted it. Thank you. You note that the step says when we were wrong, not if we were wrong. This goes right along with your spirit of step 9. You have now entered the world of the spirit, and our next step is to grow in effectiveness and usefulness to our higher power. This is the beginning of a lifetime job that you're going to do on step 10. I hear people talk about steps 10, 11, and 12 are maintenance steps. I like to think of them as growth steps. I don't want to just maintain. I want to keep growing and changing and what have you. And the key is, why promptly? I love the way the steps are written, you know. They just really are, nail you to the wall. Promptly, so you don't get the chance to procrastinate. You don't get to rationalize or justify your behavior or attitude. You make it promptly. And that way you don't have to carry any guilt or any resentment or any other negative feelings around if you take care of stuff promptly. You know, it's like in your home, if you take care of little accidents, my husband tickles me. Whenever he spills anything, he panics and he stares at it. Now, if that would clean it up, I would be okay with that. But to me, when you spill something, you promptly get something to clean it up with. Because if you don't let it get a hold of you, or if you don't let it dry, it's easier to take care of. And it's the same thing here. When you're looking back over your day, when you've done something wrong, promptly admit it, if nothing else, but to yourself. And then take care of it. Okay. It's a continuation of your steps 4 and 5 on a daily basis. You can't carry a grudge around with promptly. You ever think about it? My sister told me one time we were traveling across the United States in 1992. And it was the year after our mother had died. And we took a month off and just took a trip. She said, I'd never get to go anywhere. You get to go everywhere. I said, I'm so sick of your whining. I said, shut up and get in the car. She said, where are we going? I said, everywhere. And so we did. We just went as the Spirit leads, and we just went all over the United States, put 10,000 miles on a car in a month, you know, driving and seeing, showing her all these things that she always wished she'd seen and never got an opportunity to see. And we were going along, and she said, you know, Bobby hurt my feelings, and I will never forgive him for that. Till the day I die, I will not forgive him for that. And I said, well, for God's sake, what did he do? And she said, well, she was sweet on a friend of his when she was 16 years old. And she said, Bobby teased me in front of him and embarrassed me. I'll never forgive him for that. And I said, well, Dorothy, Bobby's been dead since 1951. Do you think it's bothering him a hell of a lot? I don't care. I'm never going to forgive him. Okay. See, my sister's a grudge holder. She doesn't ever get past something like that. You know, it's a real fortunate thing she doesn't get angry very much. But we've had some new developments there I'll share with you later. The thing about it is, when you have to promptly admit you're wrong, JD and I had a situation a few years ago. He talks about a lot of things that never come to pass. You know, he's always going to do this, he's going to do that, and it doesn't come to pass. You don't think too much about it. And he told me he was thinking about putting a water garden in the backyard. And so he talked about it for several years. I saw some books come into the house about water gardens, but I saw no water garden, so it's not a big deal. I went away to Kentucky one weekend. I came back, and I have 2 poodles. And I got home late Sunday night, and everything was fine as far as I could tell. The next morning I woke up and my bed felt funny. And I look, and there's mud all over my sheets. And it's like waking up with the horse head in The Godfather. You're just like, what is this, you know? And I look, and my black dogs are brown. They are muddy. And it's like they're under the cover with you. And it's like, what happened here? And so I'm looking, and there's mud on my carpet. There's mud in my house. Where is all this mud coming from? Okay. While I was gone, JD decided he would put in the water garden. And all this dirt that came out of the hole for the water garden, he's watched too many movies. And I think he thought he was Steve McQueen, where you know, walk across the prison yard and let the dirt out under your pants. He decided he would scatter the dirt all across the backyard. It rained that night. Now, JD, when the water garden, every book I saw said the water garden is from 18 inches to two foot deep. Ours was 5 foot deep. You can swim in ours. So that was a tremendous amount of dirt that came out of there. And there was now a river of mud in the backyard that was in the house by way of the dogs. And I called my sponsor and I said, I'm going to kill him for sure. I'm going to kill him. There's no question in my mind. He deserves to die. I can't tell you what my house is, a river of mud. And so I said, I don't know what to do. And she said, lock the pet door so the dogs can't get out in the backyard. That's a start. Bathe the dogs. It's like sometimes when you get into that, you need somebody that can give you specific, concise things to do because you're so overwhelmed, you can't think of what to do. And so I bathe the dogs and see, the mud can't be cleaned up in the house until it dries. You just smear mud, you know. And so my dogs are sitting there. Now, my dogs have their own pet door and have all their lives. How often do they go out? I don't know. Don't care. Well, it makes a difference when they're locked in. So every hour on the hour, I'm taking my dogs on a leash out in the front, and they're going, why are we out here? What is she doing? And then here an hour later, here we are again. And they're looking at me, they're walking and sitting down going, what are we supposed to do? This is not what you're supposed to be doing. So when my husband came home later that afternoon, he saw me out in the yard with the dogs and he says, what's the matter? I said, go in the house, take a look around and have a solution by the time I get back. And when I went in, he was sitting with his head on the bar going, oh God, oh God. Oh, God. And I said, funny you didn't mention that we had a pond in the backyard. Oh, God. Funny you didn't mention it was going to be so deep, isn't it? And he said, funny you did it behind my back while I was gone. Yep, yep. You see, he wanted to make it bigger than what we had discussed, talked about. And he figured that once it was in, what could I say or do? You know, he found out. I could say and do plenty. But the main thing was, what are we going to do? Not only that, we're having house guests in 2 days. And we're having a yard party in a couple of weeks. And here is this river of mud on the yard. Well, we let the mud dry in the house. We cross-fenced the yard to where the patio became the end of the yard until the yard could dry up. Well, it was going to take a long time for the grass to survive under the mud and then come out. And so my sister decided she would help him. And so for our yard party, we were the best yard in the neighborhood. We had AstroTurf. Hundreds of dollars of AstroTurf out in the backyard, because see, we put this water garden in to save money. I was very, very angry. I was angry. I felt that I had been disrespected because I had been left out of the loop. It had happened behind my back, and I martyred on that. Had a really hard time with that. And then finally, several months went by, and I was just telling him, I hate the water garden. I hate everything about the water garden. And the more that he put it in, the more it looked like a swimming pool. And I said, it's not a swimming pool. And I said, not only that, it's not safe. He said, what do you mean it's not? And I said, well, JD, if the dogs are playing soccer, and he had gotten, this was nothing, kill me. I saw these big sheets of marble coming in the backyard, and he took a hammer to them. and he's breaking the marble into, and he's making this mosaic thing around the pool. And I'm going, what the hell are you doing? I said, it looks more like a swimming pool now than it did. It looked like a deck on a swimming pool. And he says, well, it's really not turned out the way I had envisioned. I said, I would hope not. But I said, if the dogs are playing soccer, which they do all the time, and if the ball goes into the pond, the dogs will go after it, and they'll drown. He said, they can swim. I said, for how long? They can't swim forever. And when you're in water 5 foot deep and there is no shallow place to get out, how does a dog swim forever and then propel himself out? I said, how do you propose they do that? Oh, I said, it's dangerous. I don't like it. I hate it. I hate you. I hate you for putting it there. So we went on, and it was not a nice time in our home. And for the first time, I'm wondering, you know, maybe we don't need to be together. If he thinks like this, and I got off on my soapbox about being left out of the loop and being so martyring about that. And then I prayed and I said, God, what is the solution to this? I can't seem to get over it. I can't get around it. What is the deal? And so God changed the cable channel. Isn't it funny, the solution God comes up with? And he put the Home and Garden show on our TV. And they were showing water gardens, and they were showing the different yards and things, and they were talking about the gardener's dream, and I just wanted to puke. And I realized I had rained all over his dream. His dream had not turned out like he wanted it to either, but he had to stand by it because I was so adamant against it. You know how you have to take sides and dig in. And so when he came in, I told him, I said, I understand that you didn't intend for it to turn out. And he said, is there anything you like about it? I said, no. It's too deep. It's too big. The marble looks crappy. It's dangerous. I can't find anything good about that water garden. He says, what do you want me to do? Just fill in the hole? And I said, no, I don't guess so. I said, I know that's your dream, and I've rained all over your dream. I just don't want us to fight anymore about it. And he said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, I think that you need to make it safe where my dogs can't get hurt. Because I said, JD, if one of my dogs drowned, you'll have to leave. Because these are my kids. Not having children, my dogs are my kids. And these were dogs that were 14, 15 years old. I could not have just forgive and forget if my dog drowned because of his stupidity. I just couldn't have done it. And so, anyway, he said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, I've been thinking. And I said, you know, I have traveled all over the world, and I collect rocks wherever I go. And I'm talking about big rocks. I get tickled sometimes. You get to the airport, and the sky cap says, what do you got in here, rocks? I said, no, rock, one, 75-pound rock. And I had these rocks from all over. And I said, I had them around a cactus garden. And I said, I'll give up the cactus garden if you take those rocks and build it around the pond so that the dogs would stop when they get there instead of just going straight on in from momentum. And so I sacrificed my rocks, and we got out there, and together we redid the water garden as far as we took all that marble crap off and we put the rocks on. And I said, and I do know how to build a waterfall. And he said, where'd you learn? I said, well, I was watching that Home and Garden channel. So we built the waterfall, and so then we had it, you know, but it was that promptly getting over it because we let that linger on. It was much harder to get over because it lingered so long. That's my point. You know, I had to learn how to do that. Another thing with the defect of dishonesty, you know the best way to get cured of that? Admit it promptly. When you hear yourself tell a lie, you say, excuse me, I just told a lie. And the truth is, and then you tell the truth. You won't have to do that but two or three times till you won't be telling that lie, because you know you're going to have to say, I just told a lie. And there's something about that that really grates against your nerves, you know? At least it did mine. The emotional binges I used to have, I had emotional hangovers from those, you know. when you get in all that feelings, and it would make me feel terrible, terrible to have those kind of feelings later. So I had to go back and not rationalize my actions by blaming other people, but accept responsibility and go, you know, nobody made me act like that. I had a choice. I made a wrong choice. The sponsor told me that when I was doing my daily inventory to realize that every day to look for good, because there's not a day goes by you don't do something good. You know, you may have some things that you need to clean up for the next day, but it's, you know, it's a poor pig who don't get an acorn every once in a while. You know, you do something. And there's a purpose in this step, is to help us to acquire the habit of daily self-appraisal, accurate appraisal. You know, the 12 and 12 says there's a spiritual axiom that says, whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. And it's, what am I not doing or doing that I shouldn't be or should be in this situation? Whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? And I hated that statement. I just hated it, but it's true. And when I let you mad, it's because I let you make me mad. You know, when you hurt my feelings, it's because I've let you hurt my feelings. No, I have a part in that, you know. There was a black guy that used to come to our group. And he says, you know, always have choice. He said, now I'm a black man. And he said, if you call me, and he used the N-word, he says, I ask myself, are you being one? And if you are, you need to change your behavior and your attitude. And if you're not, you need to pray for that person. But under no circumstances do you need to argue with them or fight with them about it. He says, if somebody calls you something, say, am I being that way? Look at yourself honestly. What are you doing? And then we have spot check inventory. And that's if I'm uncomfortable at any point during the day, I can look at myself and go, what is my part? Why am I feeling the way I'm feeling? See, that's one of the first things I do when I'm doing my 10th step at night is, how do I feel tonight? How's my feelings tonight? Am I angry? Am I hurt? What are my feelings tonight? Now, what has happened that's made me feel this way? Now, why did I choose to feel this way? Could I have felt another way? You know, that kind of thing. Am I in fear? Have I been in fear today? Have I been dishonest today? Have I been resentful today? Have I been into self-pity? Poor me. God, yeah. At home, you know, they say this is the Al-Anon salute, you know. I don't know. But I have to remember that fear usually breaks down into false events appearing real. Sometimes it looks that way, you know, false events appearing real. Fear is always in the future. We're afraid of what's going to happen or what's not going to happen. It's not in the now. If it's not in the now, I don't have to deal with it. You know, that takes a lot of fear out of my life. It's not happening right now. Why should I be afraid? It's not happening right now. Who can change the future? Another, who can change the past? Even God can't change the past. The past is the past. It's gone. 5 minutes ago is gone. We can't undo 5 minutes ago. It's gone. It's a done deal. Move forward. Move forward. We're right here in the now. One of my greatest teachers about right here in the now is my sister. On November 30th, 1999, 45 years to the day I watched Daddy die, my sister died in the front seat of the car with me. She had kidney failure. It made her heart stop. And it looked like she was having a heart attack to me. And so there I am in bumper-to-bumper traffic in front of the biggest mall. It's a Tuesday after Thanksgiving, and everybody's Christmas shopping. You can't move, no traffic. And her heart, her chest isn't moving. And so it's now, do I CPR or do I drive? Do I do CPR? What do you do? What do you do? And so that's what I asked God. I said, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? And about that time, I saw a motorcycle cop come in. I got his attention. And I told him, I said, I think my sister's had a heart attack. She's not breathing. There was a new hospital. It was open 7 blocks away. It had been open 2 weeks. If it had been the old hospital, there would have been no question. He made the traffic part. He got us over there. Dorothy was blue by the time we got there. They took her in. I had had her at the doctor's that morning and was getting a prescription refilled at the drugstore and pulling out of the shopping center there when she choked twice, her head rolled back, and that was it. Got her there in the hospital. I told them a symptom or two she had been having, and they went to work on her. And they came in, they told me there was very was not very likely Dorothy was going to survive. And I had already accepted that from looking at it. And I thought, God, you know, 45 years to the day, I can't believe it's happening again. And then they came in and told me that they had been able to resuscitate her, but she was in a deep coma. They had done an emergency dialysis, and that they wouldn't know what we have until she wakes up, if she wakes up. 25 days, Dorothy did not wake up. When Dorothy woke up, Dorothy didn't wake up. Someone woke up, but it's not Dorothy anymore. My sister has no memory anymore. It took away all of her short-term memory, and it scrambled most of her long-term memory. She had to learn to walk and talk and be continent again. She had to learn how to do all those things. And we put her in a nursing home for about 4 months while we had a therapist working with her around the clock to get her to be able to do those things. And then she decided she wanted to go home. She wanted to go home. She had, the idea in her mind if she went home, everything would be okay. Of course, it wasn't going to be okay, but I told her, I said, Dorothy, I'll take you home and keep you in your home as long as it's humanly possible to do so. So I went and I got someone to stay with Dorothy, and it had to be someone. You see, my sister is insulin-dependent diabetic, and so she could not be trusted to take her medication or not take her medication when she wasn't supposed to, because she couldn't remember if she had taken one, two, or she might take it five times. You never know. And we had to stop her from feeding her dogs. She killed one of her dogs by overfeeding it because she couldn't remember she'd fed it. And you know a dog will eat every time you put it in front of them, you know. And Dorothy lives in the moment because she... You can be with her, and 10 minutes later, she won't remember happened 10 minutes before. But she knows who I am, and she knows who J.D. is. And, you know, that's this being prompt and being there for someone, you know, living in the now, living in the now. That's what this step is all about, to get you where you are living in today, looking at your day each day. Well, see, my sister has about each 15 minutes. You know, and she's been a good example for me on how to live. It's real funny because she gets real angry easy, which she never did before, and she'll get real angry real quick, and I'll grab her by the shoulders and I'll say, Dorothy, and she'll go, what? And I'll stick my tongue out at her, and then she'll stick her tongue out at me, and we both laugh, and now she doesn't remember what it was. So see, not remembering isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, my 10-step journal are letters to God in which I tell God about my day, and I reflect over my day, and I look for the good and bad and any amends I might owe for that day. And I try to do it as soon as possible so I don't forget about it, gloss over, and then have that yucky feeling about something's not quite right and I don't know what it is. It's because I haven't looked at something, you know. I had a lot of self-pity and depression about Dorothy. It was about the same time, like I said, when I was sitting there in the waiting room waiting for Dorothy to come out of the coma. And I had somebody from my Al-Anon group there with me day and night, the whole time. And the doctor came in to talk to me about my sister, and he noticed I was shaking, and I couldn't quit shaking. And it started that day. And he said, you know, you really need to be seen. And so I went to the physician and found out that I had a heart condition. So I'm in one hospital, Dorothy's in another. I'm having a heart catheterization, and Dorothy's in a coma. And I'm going, God, if Al-Anon's ever told me anything, I can't take care of her if I can't take care of me. So it's very imperative that I be able to take care of me and to follow what the doctor says, you know. And there's always going to be something to be done on life's journey, you know. We accept life on life's terms, and sometimes those terms are pretty hard. And the year of 2000 was extremely difficult year, because here Dorothy was just coming out of her coma, and here I was with a heart condition. One of my dogs died a few weeks later. One of the girls I sponsored, I had a pulmonary embolism, which is a blood clot in her lung, and she died. She was getting married in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then 5 months to the day, one dog died. The other one grieved to death and died. You know, it just seemed like everywhere I went and everywhere I turned, I was losing things. And it was such a, if you couldn't live one day at a time, you weren't going to be able to make it. And then that was the year of the ice storm. And we were truly powerless because we lost power when the ice came down on the trees and the trees came down on the power lines. And we went for 2 weeks without power. I was cold. I was hungry. And I sat there and I watched all the fish in my aquarium, some I'd had 15, 17 years, watch every one of them suffocate and freeze in my house. It was 20-something degrees. Couldn't get out. Couldn't get out because of the power lines down. They would tell you, stay where you are. And it wasn't just an area of town. It was the most of the state. I mean, y'all probably heard about it on the news, you know. And then we got power back for 5 days and it went again for another week. So we lost all of our food twice. You know, it was a real difficult time to go through. And I went into a very deep depression. It was like it was just too much. I couldn't get one thing grief processed until the next thing happened, and now on the way. And I had always said, I don't understand people who are depressed. I do now. It's like, well, I needed that experience, I guess, you know. But it was sort of funny. J.D. made the comment to me. He said, I've got to get you out of the house. I said, yes, it would be good because suicide has become an option. And you know, the thing of it is, it's like you're shut off. You can't get to a meeting because you can't get out of your house. You can't call anyone because your phones are dead. You know, because after the power goes out, most of us have the plug-in phones and stuff. Your power goes out, so does your phone. And your cell phone will only last a day or two without recharging, and so there you are. And it was being like totally shut off from everybody and everything. It was a very, very dark time. We finally got out one night, and we were eating supper, and J.D. says, honey, look out the window. Isn't it gorgeous? It's snowing. I thought, I'll go across this table, and I will strangle the life out of your body. It is not beautiful. Snow and cold. I mean, I've been freezing for days. And isn't the snow nice? No, it is not nice. And so we're leaving there, and he says, we must go to Walmart. I said, oh, God, yeah, we've died, go to hell. We got to go to Walmart first. I said, I'll tell you what, when you die, I'm going to put you in a box out in Walmart parking lot just so you'll be comfortable. And he said, okay, you know. We go in there, and what he wanted to get some bird seed because he knew our birds who are dependent upon us, that we feed them all the time. You know, when your birds are used to being fed all the time, they have a hard time too. So he was getting, you know, several bags. And it's so funny because my husband has a phrase he uses that is one of those, it's like a pushing a button, you know, that gets on your last nerve. And then my husband is hard of hearing, and he won't say, I didn't hear you. He'll say, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Well, that is irritating to know that you're saying, and he's blocking you out, not paying attention. So that particular night, he's there, and he's getting these humongous 50-pound bags of bird seed, and he's putting them in the cart. And I said to him, if you turn them upside down, then the barcode will be up, and you'll only have to handle them once and not have to rearrange it when you get to the checkout. He didn't pay any attention. Here goes the next one. And when he puts the third one in, he says, you know, if I was to turn that upside down. And I looked at him and I said, what the hell did you think I said? And he said, I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. I went, yeah, that does it. And I sprang and I grabbed him by the throat. And I had him knocked over and down in the bird seed. And I'm like, I'll kill you, I'll kill you. And he goes, my God. And there was this one woman watching. She's going, go, girl. And all of a sudden, it got funny to me. That's what saved him. It got funny, and I started laughing, and I couldn't quit laughing. I had to lay down in the bird seat. I'm going, God, this is so funny. He said, we didn't get you out of the house a minute too soon. That broke the depression. That laughter. See, the laughter is so healing. And what I realized, laying there in the bird seed, dying laughing, I hadn't laughed hardly at all that year because nothing had been funny that was going on in my life. Everything was losing, losing, dying, being taken away. And I had lost the laughter from my life. And how important and how healing laughter is, you know. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. You have to expand your spiritual life if you're going to grow and mature. You know, we've made a start, but you got to keep on. You got to develop this way. Al-Anon is not my life, it's my way of life. You know, I have more in my life than just Al-Anon. But Al-Anon is a part of my life. It's a part of my way of trying to function and live and to get through things. And if I hadn't had that, I wouldn't have been able to do the last 6 years with my sister. You know, I've had to learn so much. Like I told you, I took my sister and I put her in her own home and I got someone to stay with her 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for over 5 years. Did you know you can go through $500,000 in 5 years with that? Home care is very expensive because you've got to have someone who can give shots and things of that nature, which is just not everybody are licensed to do that kind of thing. And they become a family member with you, you know. And the thing about it is, it's like, how do you take her? And I told Dorothy, I said, Dorothy, we're going to have to put you in the nursing home because financially we just can't afford this anymore. We're going to have to sell your home. And my sister had collected beautiful artifacts from all over the world for years. She had worked for Procter & Gamble for 38 years. And she, like I say, she was the first woman soybean buyer in the South. She was the foremost in her field. She was brilliant. She worked with the Chicago Board of Trade. And she can't read a book because she can't remember from one page to the next. She can read, but she can't retain. And so it's too frustrating for her to try to read because if she reads one page, she can't remember. She was watching CNN news all day long because, you know, it's the same thing every 30 minutes. It was new to her. It was new every 30 minutes to her, you know. But these were things, and she doesn't even do that anymore now. She doesn't because she can't do the 30 minutes anymore. But you've got to have that spiritual expansion. And Dorothy, she's got a good spiritual life, you know. She's an inspiration in many, many ways. And she's a blessing to me, even though she's in the way she is. Because, you know, there's one thing I know, and that is my sister loves me. That is one thing that she has not forgotten. She has not forgotten that she loves me. Keeping spirituality simple seems to work best for me. I don't know if it does for you. Just ask yourself, one, do I believe there is a God? Two, do I believe God cares for me? Do I trust God to take care of me? Will I allow God to be my best friend? Will I allow God the freedom to do His will in my life? Am I going to give God my cooperation? It's pretty simple. It's all you have to do. If you can answer yes to those questions, you can learn how to live happy, joyous, and free. Step 11 is about discipline. I have to discipline myself to do daily prayer and meditation. When I first started doing meditation, if I could go 3 or 4 minutes, that was good. You know? Because my mind has a tendency, yes, I've got to meditate. God is good. God is good. I got to buy groceries. Let's see. I need milk. God is good. God is good. Bring it back. Bring it back. You know, it took me a while to develop the ability to not allow my mind the freedom to wander, but to stay focused on what I was trying to stay focused on. Makes a big difference. I made a decision, like I say, in steps 1, 2, and 3, I found my higher power, and I made my decision to turn my will and my life over. And steps 6 and 7 is where I'm allowing God to work in my life to remove all those things that stand in the way. And then I cleaned up the wreckage of my past in 8 and 9. Living and taking a look at my life on a daily basis in 10. And now I'm ready to get to know more about the power. The power to carry things out, you know. getting more about God, learning about God. And in order to get to know about anybody or anything, I have to spend time with them. If you have somebody you're getting to know, how do you get to know them? By sitting with them, spending time with them, sharing with them, listening to them. And, you know, for a long time, praying was easy as far as, I know how to make a bunch of requests. But the hard part was listening to God for the answer. Because I'd get bored just sitting there. I'm going, it's not working. It's not working. And then all of a sudden, God began to show me things. And one of the first things he showed me was in my aquarium. One day I was wondering about, we were under a bunch of financial stress at the time, and I'm saying, God, how is it all going to turn out? I'm just wondering here how it's all going to turn out. Have you got any input? How is this going? Because, see, I want to know the future. You know, God can see around the corners. I can't. But God gave me a lesson that day, because before I sat down to meditate, I had put the food out in the aquarium. And there's some fish that eat at the top, and there's some that eat in the middle, and there's some that eat at the bottom. And when the master, which was me, of the fish tank, puts the feed out, there's enough for everybody for one day. Because if you put more than that, you sour the water and it kills everything. And so everything everybody needs, no matter what level you are in the tank, you get fed from that one feeding. Isn't that amazing? And I realized what God was telling me is that each day I put the stuff out and there's enough for everybody. You'll get yours. Don't worry. What's the point? If you're going to pray, why worry? And if you want to worry, why bother to pray? You know, it's pretty simple. You're either going to trust God or you're not. And I have to realize that I'm God's kid, and I have to learn to act and become what God would have one of his kids to be and do. It's not a big deal. He just wants me to think about the fact of that I am his. I'm his kid before I'm anything else in the world, before I'm a wife, before I'm a friend, before I'm a member of Al-Anon, a sponsor. I am God's kid, you know. And am I reflecting the kind of thing that is somebody would want to be attracted to or not? You know, it's like one of the girls I sponsor called me one night, and we had had forecast of some sleet and snow, and we had been taking turns driving to the meeting, and it was her turn, and she said, you know, they got that forecast for sleet. And I said, yeah, but we'll be okay. I prayed about it. No big deal. And she said, she hung up the phone and went, whoopee. And so anyway, we started to the meeting, and her daughter was going to Alateen. She was in the car with us, and we got there, and sure enough, during the meeting, the roads were covered with ice when we came back out. We don't get near as much ice snow as we get ice where I live. And so as we pulled on to the interstate and she was coming up to this big overpass, all of a sudden she noticed all the lights going every which way, and there was a massive wreck in progress. And so she did what she was supposed to do, and she panicked. And she slammed her foot on the brakes. Well, you know, that's the worst possible thing you can do. And so we started in this spin. And I said, turn in the direction of your slide. And she couldn't hear. Fear was louder. And I said it again, turn in the direction of your slide. And she couldn't. So I grabbed the wheel and turned just before we went over the overpass. And we stopped, and the police came in a few minutes, and they said, who'd you hit, or who hit you? And I said, no one. And he said, well, what are y'all doing? I said, we're waiting for the traffic to clear. And he just looked at us. And we were the only car in a 27-car pileup that did not hit anybody nor was hit by anybody. And we're sitting there, and we're waiting on the traffic, and she turns and she said, I want your God. I said, what? She said, I want your God. You said you prayed and we'd be okay. She said, I want that kind of God that's going to take care of me in this kind of situation. I want your God. So you live your program. I never thought about that going to be what happened, or that she was going to get a lesson or anything. I was just telling her that I trusted God was going to get us there and back. You know, so many times, if you don't think about it, when you think of the thousands of miles that I have flown over the years, you know, I have to trust that there's a power greater than me that's going to get me back at some point in time. And if not, well, then that's okay, too. It has to be okay either way. You know, it won't be necessarily what I want, but I'm going to get what I need. And see, prayer is not my opportunity to try and change God's mind. but for me to allow God to change my mind to what He would want. And so many times I would try and tell God what to do in prayer. You know, I knew I wasn't allowed to tell my husband anymore, but I thought I could tell God and He'd get him to do it. When I'm in confusion, I am not in the will of God, because my God is not the author of confusion or chaos. That's my thinking. My God is that calm, still voice that can be heard, but it can't be heard over my screaming and fuming and ranting and raving. I can't hear God's voice when I'm screaming, you know, because it's that small, still voice. So when you're having your fit, just remember, can God's voice be heard over yours? Because it's difficult for me. My higher power always gives me the power to do His will. I don't have the power to do my will. So one of these things, and when it's happening, I ask myself, is this working? If it's not working, chances are it's my will. It's not His will. His will, He gives me the power to carry it out. My will doesn't usually have the power to carry it out. So many times I think when I pray, I want God to co-sign my will. You know, I've already figured out. And God always has another plan. I ask Him, was there anything wrong with my plan? Are you just doing this to prove to me there's another way, you know? But what was wrong with my plan here, you know? I love to, there's people that say, you know, that I pray weird, but that's okay. That's between God and me. God's always patient with me. God's a very positive thing. His will is always good and positive. That's how one of the things I can do. And God's will for me is always to act like His kid. Now, when I came in, I was so big on meditation books, I bought everything there was to be had, AA and L, non-meditation book. You know, I can't meditate on 25 things at the same time. I don't know about y'all. It just didn't work for me. It's too much to do. So in the morning, I read a NoDat book. That's one thing. I can, you know, and then, you know, if you take and write down after you finish your page, and if you write down a one-liner of what is God's will for me today, what did I get out of that reading? What did that tell me to do or not to do? And put that in your pocket and carry it with you. When you get to a moment of confusion, open, read your little thing again. Bring yourself back in. Center yourself again. If you want to read another meditation, read one right before you go to bed. Think about it till you go to sleep. You know, but to me, you can overdo all that, you know, because you just can't remember anything when you're too diversified. That's the reason this program's simple. They tell you to keep it simple. You ever notice that the slogan says, keep it simple? It doesn't say, get it simple. It's not simple getting it simple. That's what I found out after Mama died. I decided to simplify my life. That was the hardest thing I ever did, was to simplify my life. My mother was a pack rat. She had stuff from the day that she arrived in Memphis, I swear. Mama never threw away a butter container, a milk carton, nothing. You never know when you might need that. Of course, you got to remember, here she was, without anything, and then after she got a little, the depression came along, took it away again. So my mother's thing was, you never throw anything away because you might need it sometime. Whereas my thing is, if in doubt, toss it out. Because I can't stand the clutter. I never have been able to stand. I don't function well in clutter. You know, if in doubt, toss it out. And people say, well, what if you need it again? God will bring it back. You're going to deny God the opportunity to give it to you again? You know, if you really need, God will provide your needs. It may not be all your wants, but God will provide all your needs to you. And when I pray, I try to have God on my mind. Tell God everything that's on my mind, things that are bothering me, the good, the bad, the garbage. And then I have a God can. I'm sure y'all have God cans up here. You know, I can't, God can. You write down your problems and put them in your God can and see what God will do with them. Well, I have a pottery jar that says, be still and know that I am God. And so in that, I put all those little things, those little petitions that I have. And then about over 6 months, I go through it and see what He's done with all of them. Because see, after He takes care of it, I forget about them. And then I go back through and I go, oh yeah, that was a big deal that day. I wonder why that was such a big deal. Look what God did with that. You know, isn't that something? Guess what? Every day you can put something else in. It's okay. And say you have to put the same thing in 5 or 6 times. If it keeps bothering you, as many times as it bothers you, put it back in the can. You really shouldn't take them back once you give them to God, but God understands that. You know, we're human beings, and He understands that. He made us human. And as such, we are imperfect. He doesn't expect us to be perfect. Doesn't expect that. And in the beginning, like I say, I would think I was doing so good on my meditation, but I found out later that, you know, one of the best things I ever learned to meditate on was God loves me. How does God love me? And I begin to see all the different ways that God loves me. You know, one night I was talking to my sponsor, and I said, God never does anything for me. My life is so grim. She said, really? She said, how'd you get to the meeting? I said, my car, why? She said, oh, you got a car. Yeah, yeah. She said, how'd you get here in the car? And I said, well, I put gas in it. Oh, you had the money to put gas in it. Where are you going after the meeting? Well, I'm going home. You got a home. I go, yeah, I got a home. I got a car. She said, God never does anything for you, does he? She said, I feel so sorry for you. You know, it's like we take for granted so much of that. One of the girls that I sponsor, her son is in prison for 26 years. And I write to Joe. And Joey will write me things that are just amazing about the gratitude. You know, things that we don't think about in a normal case. It's like he told me, he says, you know, one of the things I dream about when I get out? Now, of all the things for being in prison for 26 years, what would you dream about doing when you get out? I can take a bath. I haven't had a bath in 12 years, I think it is now. He says, I love water and I love to swim. He said, I would give anything to be able to take a bath. There are no baths in prison. He said, it would be nice to be able to go somewhere on the front without having to wait till the first of the hour. You can only move from one location to the next. He's in a federal prison on the top of the hour, and then you're locked in after 10 minutes, and you can't leave that place until the top of the next hour. The freedom that we have to come and go out of a room. He can't receive anything through the mail as a gift, not a book, nothing. Because somebody will take that and use it to do something they shouldn't, and so he can't. And he says, but you know, he says, I love the fact that you're my friend. And he said, I love the fact, you see, I write to him like I talk to you. And he says, it's so good. I can't send him a tape. They won't let you send him anything. And so one of the guys I met at the International in Toronto takes a meeting to that prison sometimes when they're allowed in. And so one day I got a letter from Joey, and they read every line he writes and every line I write. And so he said, we got to listen to a tape from a lady in the South. He was real funny. I think you know her. So the guy had taken the tape into the prison. You know, but think about, you don't have to live like that. The opportunity, he told me one day, he says, I had a beautiful thing I saw this morning. I saw a hummingbird out my cell window. Just to be able to see a hummingbird was such a big event in his life. He is so grateful for those little bitty things that we take for granted. See, never take them for granted. You know, he said he never appreciated life in the fullest until he didn't have it. You know, and that's the truth. We usually don't. There's times when you're going to need to make decisions and you don't know which way to go. And this is where I'll say, God, I'm going to pray about this and I'm going to ask you to show me in a way that I can understand. And if I still don't get the decision, if I don't have a clear-cut direction, I'll say, okay, God, here's what I'm going to do. And if this is not what I'm supposed to do, block it. If it is what I'm supposed to do, bless it. And please show me in a way that I can definitely understand. And then, if I still don't have an answer, I go about doing what's right in front of me to do until I get the answer. Because I've learned some patience over the years, you know. Sometimes you have to wait. You know, I always think God answers us in so many ways. He'll say yes, he'll say no, he'll say not right now. My God will say, you got to be shitting me. Or he'll say, I've got a much better idea, you know. And it's just, you know, that's just the way it is. Sometimes God has a much better idea than what I thought it ought to be. And you just have to wait and watch life unfold and trust that it is going to be the way it's supposed to be. And you'll never understand it. You know, there's so many questions. I said, God, when I get there face to face, I've got some questions for you. And my husband says, assuming you get the face to face. The day that I took my sister down to have her admitted into the nursing home was a real traumatic day. Now, several weeks before that, I had been looking for someone to care for her schnauzer. She had an old schnauzer. And I knew that my dogs and her dog is real aggressive, mine was not. And hers had never been neutered. And so therefore, he wanted to do the territory thing. And so keeping him wasn't an option. And so I had a girlfriend who works with the rescue service there in Little Rock, Animal Rescue. And so she had told me about this place to call, and I had, and they got back to me, and they said, here's the situation. We have a couple of gentlemen who had applied to adopt an older dog as a companion to their older dog. But while they were waiting for us to clear them, because they run background checks and everything on these people that want to adopt, and he said, while we were running that, someone else adopted the dog they were looking at. But they had mentioned our dog to him. Said, would you be willing to let them come see? And I said, sure. And so they came out to the house, Lewis and Paul. And Lewis was undergoing treatment for cancer. Real sweet, sweet guys. And normally her dog, when you come in, first come in, if she doesn't know you, Bo is real standoffish, growl, this kind of thing. He immediately ran over to these guys and began to lick on their hands. And they were sitting in the floor playing with him. And my sister's watching this. And I've told her that what we're going to have to do, we're going to have to put her in the nursing home. And I tell her every day, because if you don't, you know, she can't remember. And everything's a shock. And so we tell her several times. And so that day we had told her they were coming to check on Bo. And she's watching him, and after about an hour, she said, would you gentlemen like to take him with you when you leave? And I'm thinking, oh, my God, because I was thinking, you know, like when she went in, and she said, I'd like to know he's taken care of before I go. And they said, most certainly. And so she went and got there, got his little food tray and his little stuff, and she gave in. She says, that's such a burden off my heart. Because, you know, she loved her dog. She'd had her dog all those years, and she remembered her dog, and he was constantly her companion. But he went without a peep with these gentlemen, and he stayed there up until a few months ago when he passed away. And they made him a very good, and I want you to know, it was such a God deal. They took Bo down to see my sister every 2 or 3 weeks, and it was a 60-mile trip. And they took him to see her, and they took pictures of him and her together, and they took pictures of other people in the nursing home with the dog that were petting the dog, and when they'd come back on their next trip, they'd bring the pictures from the last visit and give to everybody. What a God deal. What a God deal that was. And they have made me a CD with all the pictures of Dorothy and her dog. You know, just super, super nice things. It was far better than what I would have ever dreamed it could have been. And Dorothy's reaction to it, see, that was so totally surprising. And the day that I took her down to put her in the nursing home, she looked back at her house, and she had tears in her eyes, and she said, let's go. And so we went down there. Got down there, and I realized I'd forgotten her medication. Well, I knew I was going to have to come back and clean out her house and get it ready to be sold and go through all that rigmarole. And so I turned around after I got her settled in, and I went back down to her house. A truck pulled up. Within 5 minutes, two gentlemen got out and said, are you going to want to be selling her house? And I said, yes. And they said, we had heard that you were. Could we see the house? And it was the guys that used to work where she worked for so many years. And they gave me about double of what the price would have normally been for Dorothy's house. And they said, because we love and respect Miss Dorothy, we want her to be cared for well. And so, with a handshake, 15 minutes after I was there, they bought the house. Is that a God deal or what? You know? And then my sister had a bunch of really nice things, like I said, that she'd had. And one of the girls that I sponsor works at an antique mall. And she says, I can get a lot better price for a lot of these things than you would at an auction. And so she took them and she did. You know, it's like there was always somebody there to help and to be in that process, because you'd pray about it, you'd meditate on it, and there it would be. God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Step 11 brings me into spiritual balance. And I try that I'm not asking God why so much anymore. I'm just accepting the things that happen. You know, why is the argument where I try to convince God that he needs to do it my way? You know, that's my explain to him. You know, hey, let me tell you why. I try to fill in the spots that you're not aware of, God. You know, and I know God laughs and gets a charge out of stuff like that, because God knows everything. And there's the gratitude journal, writing down five things each day that I'm truly grateful for, never writing the same things twice. Develops an attitude of gratitude. You know, it's like the kid, the optimist and the pessimist. And they gave the optimist a gift of a room full of manure. And they gave the pessimist a room full of toys. And the pessimist looked at all the toys and he said, you know, the batteries are going to go dead. They're going to break. They're going to fall apart. This is crap. And the little optimist, they turned around and looked there, and he had a shovel and he was just going through that manure, slinging it ever which way, laughing and carrying on. They said, what you doing? He said, there's got to be a pony here somewhere. So many times we got to look for our pony. You know, I told God one day, God, if you have a defect, it's procrastination. Because it seems to me sometimes God's so slow. But God doesn't go in my time frame. And God may be slow, but he's never late. That's the best thing there. And then I have learned the sky is blue. Oh, we have a donor. A recipient or a donor? Oh, in the kitchen. That's good. Okay. The sky is blue. You know, the sky is always blue. It's never any other color. Did you know that? Because when you fly, you get up high, sky is always blue. And what happens is clouds and other things get between you and your view, but the sky never changes. It's still blue. It's always blue. And to me, that's like God. God's always there. Things may get between you and God. You may not can see God, but he's always there, just like the sky is always blue. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening,